Next, I'd like to call on Dr. Nick Berbulis, professor in the Department of Educational Policy, Organization, and Leadership at Urbana, who will be giving us the report from the faculty.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. It's not part of my prepared comments, but I want to add our thanks to the three trustees who are rotating off the board. When we talk about shared governance, certainly our relationship with the board is an important part. We really value the interactions we've had with all of you over the years. There was a terrific breakfast meeting this morning at which I think real information was exchanged in both directions. And I think I can speak on behalf of the conference in saying we hope we can have get-togethers like this in the future on a regular basis. So the topic of my comments is shared governance. Thank you for this opportunity to speak with you. I want to talk about shared governance and its importance to the university system from two perspectives. Shared governance is the right thing to do, and it's the smart thing to do. First, the question of principle. Shared governance is written, first, the question of principle. Shared governance is written throughout our system-wide governing documents, the statutes, and the general rules. As you know, these are, in effect, our constitution and all policies and procedures across the system of three universities and the units within them must be consistent with the principles laid out in those documents. Shared governance, first of all, is a matter of democracy, involving people in decisions that will affect their professional lives and well-being. Shared governance is a matter of community, bringing faculty and administration together to make decisions for the good of the whole. Shared governance is a matter of legitimacy. Even good decisions are flawed if they're not made in the right way. Shared governance is a matter of accountability. The credibility and authority of leaders within our system depend on their responsiveness to the concerns of the faculty, staff, and students who populate it. Shared governance is a particular consequence of the tenure contract with faculty. The institution has made a commitment to tenured faculty, and tenured faculty have made a long-term commitment to the institution. The average tenured faculty member in our system serves 27 years at the University of Illinois before retirement. This entitles faculty to consideration as partners in planning and decision-making, and the simple fact is that most tenured faculty will be at the institution long enough to see many administrations come and go. Finally, process is our friend. Regular, orderly, and predictable procedures for planning and decision-making help ensure that they will be done thoughtfully and with careful consideration of their consequences. That's in everyone's interests. Slide, please. Having said that, shared governance is not just a matter of following the rules. For example, many procedures call for advice or consultation between the faculty and administration, but what does that mean in practice? It's not enough simply to follow the minimal letter of the law without a commitment to its underlying spirit. Going through the motions simply because the rules say you have to do it is not shared governance. There was a former leader at this university who liked to say, people have to feel like they've been listened to. Well, no, they have to really be listened to. So the shared and shared governance expresses a deeper commitment to joining together, faculty with administration and administration with faculty, in a common effort to make the best possible decisions for the institution. As I'll discuss in a moment, it's precisely because these perspectives are different that they need each other. Shared decision-making also means shared responsibility, and as we'll see, that becomes important too. The tone is set at the top by our system leadership and the leadership of the three universities. We're in a very strong position today in this regard, and the fact that we have such bold initiatives at the system level and across the three universities demonstrates that a commitment to shared governance is not at all an impediment to doing new things and getting them done effectively. Next slide, please. Here's a useful way to think about shared governance. It is, at heart, a communicative relation, a way of talking with and listening to one another. It is in these processes of communication that shared governance gets operationalized. First, it starts with a presumption of goodwill in both directions. It may seem to go without saying that faculty and administration assume good intentions in both directions, but it's not something to be taken for granted. We've seen what happens when suspicion, even cynicism, drive people into assuming hidden motives or secret agendas in one another. For one thing, they stop listening because they assume that they think they know what the other is really thinking or trying to do. Second, as I just said, faculty and administration sometimes do view initiatives or choices differently. For example, administrators are often much more cognizant of the budgetary implications of decisions, whereas faculty tend to focus more on the mission-critical activities that are within their control. Both perspectives are important, and shared governance is a framework within which they can engage each other. At a deeper level, the conversations that constitute shared governance require that both parties recognize and appreciate the concerns of the other, wanting the insights of the other area of that the other area of expertise can offer them. This is another reason to go beyond the minimum of consultation to actively, consultations in quotation marks, to actively seeking out the information and perspectives that each has to offer the other. Third, the communicative relation of shared governance can't be adversarial, even when, or especially when, the disagreements are real. This point is crucial. There will be differences of opinion. There may be sometimes arguments. But when those take place within a relationship in which people are assuming goodwill and respecting the importance of the shared governance relationship, it's more likely that the debate will be about the substance of the issue and not about finger-pointing or attributing bad motives to one another. This gives the exchange its best chance of finding a resolution. Finally, a key feature of this communicative relation is sharing information, often including information that can't be made public, in order to reach a reasonable and informed decision. It's often the nature of administration to have access to information that others do not have. Keeping that information to yourself can be a manifestation of power. Sharing it is a manifestation of trust. Let's be clear that there will sometimes be information that simply cannot be shared, but people will accept that, they'll trust that when they've seen a more general willingness to share information. So sharing information is both an expression of one's commitment to the principle of transparency and a way of building a relationship build on trust and shared confidences in both directions. That's not just the right thing to do, it's usually the smart thing to do. And this last point leads to another feature of shared governance. Oh, next slide, please. Aside from one's commitment to shared governance as a matter of principle, it is also a best practice from the standpoint of effective leadership. Here's why. First, in almost all important endeavors for the institution, faculty buy-in and support are essential for success. You earn that buy-in and support by bringing faculty into the planning and development process as early as possible. Second, and building on that, when people have been part of a decision, they have a greater incentive to work to help it succeed. It is their credibility that is also at stake, their investment of time and energy that have gone into it. They feel responsible for the results. Third, faculty and planning often help to improve the initiative. We are a university system full of smart, experienced people, and there isn't any proposal that can't be improved upon by thoughtful questioning and input. Another senior leader I once worked with, there was a proposal, there was a disagreement, and this person said to me, "Well, Nick, you have to understand that a lot of smart people worked on this initiative." And I said, "Well, that's true, but I'm a smart person." And you know, other people who are smart people have questions and concerns here. It's a university. We're all smart people. Finally, not all decisions will be popular, and not all deliberations will yield agreement. But people are more likely to accept an outcome, even one they don't particularly like, if they've been consulted, really consulted, and know that their concerns were taken seriously. Shared governance isn't always kumbaya, but the climate for difficult decisions is improved when people have confidence in the process by which those decisions were made. For all these reasons, shared governance is a smart procedural commitment over and above the principled reasons for abiding by it. Last slide, and I'm just wrapping up. The emergence of proposals like DPI have opened up conversations about whether the role of the University Senate's conference might need to change. The statutes and general rules are clear about the procedures for review and approval of academic initiatives at the university level, but less so at the system level. Initiatives like DPI are in many ways not contemplated by the governing documents, but the same principles of active consultation with faculty about academic matters still apply, and they've been followed admirably, in my view. For all the reasons I've discussed here, the principled and the pragmatic, high-stakes initiative like this would need to be co-owned by faculty and administration and need careful, thorough, and thoughtful review. So does the University Senate's conference, for example, need to take on a new role as a kind of Senate-like review body itself and not just as a pass-through for proposals to the Senates? At the same time, from the other direction, how does USC maintain open lines of information and communication with the Senates so that they can be fully informed about system-level initiatives that will affect them and also engaged in their consideration? These are crucial conversations at the present time as we look toward the future of shared governance. The USC will continue to be actively involved in thinking about these issues during the months again. Thank you again for this opportunity to talk with you and to share these thoughts. Do you have any questions?
Thank you very much, Professor Bubulis, and also thank you for the nice conversation this morning at breakfast.
Okay. Sure, yeah, I'd echo those sentiments. I would echo those, yes.